Hi, welcome to Outrageous, our bi-weekly podcast where we talk about race, media, culture, politics, and everything in between. My name is Chris. I'm in New York City. I'm joined by my two very best friends, Trisha in LA.
Hello.
And Jason in DC.
What's up?
Hi, guys. I do want to point out that every time I introduce you, you both say hello and what's up in exactly the same manner. I'm just going to start I could just splice in that part. And so we never have to do the introduction again.
No, I think I've said hey there a few times.
I don't think so. Usually it's what's up.
Oh, all right. I thought about saying bonsoir, but I thought that was too much.
That would have been way over the top. That would have been incredibly awkward. It would just be dead air. We'd be like, should we hang up? I don't know. I want to talk about Jason's children.
Why?
Okay.
So, we were all in D.C. and I was visiting. I haven't seen Jason's kids in like the longest time. I just wanted to say they're delightful. They are so delightful. It was great.
How is that possible, Jason? How did you raise such delightful children?
They were so smart and they were so funny. And it was just like, just because when you hear Jason talk about them, he's always like, oh, kids this, oh, kids that, you know, very dad mode. But I was like, this is great. I have to say, I thoroughly enjoyed hanging out with them for 2 to 3 hours. And then I was on my way.
Exactly.
So, Jason, I don't know what your problem is.
Yeah, exactly. No, they're great. I really love the picture I got of the three of you. All three of you look great. And it was just so fun to get all of you in that picture. So what was the most fun about that experience for me was that, you know, Chris has now a few times and Trisha as well, have seen how disgusting my car is because I let my kids eat like so crazy in the back. So Chris complains about it, but now he got to see how the sausage gets made, so to speak. So like Chris turns around and my kids, as always, you know, I keep, they're all healthy snacks. They don't eat potato chips, not that kind of stuff. They're back there eating snap pea crisps and peanuts, but like they go to town.
Not so much eating it as sort of like crushing it against near their mouth and then sprinkling the garbage all over the back seat.
This is what, so Chris looks back to the back seat and then he looks at me. I'm driving. He goes, Jason, your children are covered in food.
It's disgusting. I have to say, like the back of Jason's car is just, it's like a nightmare. It's like,
I did, Trisha.
Yeah,
I did have to lay things down in order to get in there comfortably.
I opened the door and I said, oh, this has got to be a joke. Like, there's no way I can put anything I own against that. It was really gross. You should get a new car.
I appreciate your patience.
Well,
that was great fun, though. They had a good time with you, Chris.
No, they were, because, well, I'm a lot of fun. All right, so.
Oh, wait, no, I need to say one other thing about that, though. I forgot. But, Chris, so I was so excited for you to see my kids. It had been so long. And then you were such an instigator. Like, oh, my God. I was not ready for that. Because I'm like, look, Chris is great with kids. So I'm so excited for Chris to get time with my kids. It's been so long. And then, like, I would tell the kids not to do something, he would tell them to do it.
Oh, that kind of person.
He told my daughter to throw something out the window while I'm driving. I'm like, what are you doing?
I did
not. Yes, you did. I'm like, you're sabotaging what I'm doing here. Like, these kids are pretty well-behaved kids, and you're encouraging them.
I just like to see how angry you were getting.
I'm glad you enjoyed that.
I'm a terrible friend. And I mean,
I was telling the story to someone else, and they were listening, and they were like, the problem, it sounds like, is that he's a kid on about the same level as your kids. And I was like, I hadn't thought about that. But yes, he's somewhere between a 4 and a 6-year-old.
That's why he's so cool.
Exactly. But I just wasn't ready for that sabotage.
So in summary, Jason's kids are great. And I'm around the same age as they are. All right, guys. Let's jump into some topics right now. And I want Jason to start today.
So this is actually building on a little tiff that you and I had, Chris, on Facebook. If you recall, after the awful shootings in Charlotte and Tulsa, I put out a post that, you know, I was saying, like, is it time to get drastic? And, you know, I threw out some ideas about how we stop killings by police. Chris pushed back, made some very good points. You know, I'm all for the long-term policy solutions, but it is at a point where I really do think we should be considering about short-term what can we do right now to stop the killing of black men who pose no threat? I think that there are things. They're drastic. There are things that, you know, we don't normally consider.
Don't throw them out. Stop apologizing for them. Where are they?
You know, like, police in Europe, a lot of them don't carry guns other than special forces. Like, maybe just for a cooling off period and to give us space to build trust and stop the killing, maybe, like, a good portion of police need to not have guns. Or maybe we need to do unconscious bias tests. And most people have some level of unconscious bias, but if it's beyond a certain threshold, maybe you can't carry a gun anymore. Maybe, and this is one I think is actually most realistic, and I actually really believe, it's like traffic stops and pedestrian stops, stop and frisk, like that kind of stuff. Like maybe that stops except when there's reasonable suspicion of violent crime. Because I'm just amazed that, like, you know, there was the woman who, she didn't use her turn signal to change lanes. By the way, neither do 99% of the people in the country. And she got pulled over and it ended up with her being dead. So like those kinds of stops, like, you know, the fact that police are continuing to pull people over and put both themselves and civilians in these confrontational situations over a friggin' turn signal. But my larger question is, should we be thinking about something immediate to stop the killing so we can start to sort this stuff out? And it's not every month we have two or three more killings that are getting recorded that are flaring up, very understandably, all of this outrage.
You say in the short term that if we can find something to stop the killings right away, I kind of want to throw a question back at you. Like, what other social ill can you think of that we can ham-fistedly come down on and solve in the short term? Like something widespread. Because I guess what I'm getting at, Jason, is that there's no way to do this. A widespread problem. It's a complicated problem that has its roots in history and socioeconomics and power. And there is no one solution that's going to do it. Now, you brought up disarming the police. That would be a horrendous idea. That works in Europe because that's been their culture. We can't go from a culture of police having guns to police not having guns. And then for the reason being that they shoot too many black people, like that, I don't think that's going to play very well. And I don't know what our society would do with that. Disarming the police is not the answer. Now, I guess what I'm saying is that I don't think there's a short-term solution. I think there are long-term solutions. Once on this podcast, you once said, Jason, that you're not interested in who's biased. You're interested in people's actions. What you believe may have no bearing on how you act. We all have some level of implicit bias. And to say that police are not allowed to have it or they have to have it under a certain threshold, I'm not certain how useful that will be, because how many police officers will we have? And in summary, I don't think there is a short-term solution to get cops from killing black people. Everything that I could say would be a long-term cultural educative solution. Tricia, what do you think?
I don't know about that. I mean, I think that I think some cops are empowered to stop folks because their departments are broke and they have been empowered to go out and make traffic stops and they target vulnerable communities that can't fight back. So I think you could probably make some immediate move around that. I know everybody's talking about education and I get education as a thing, but I kind of don't buy it too at the same time. I mean, I feel like this notion that, you know, what we need is retraining and what we need is education. I don't believe that because, you know, one of the things that's interesting is that I think I saw a post with a veteran talking about what they were allowed to do in war. There are things you're just not allowed to do in war. He's like, there are things I'm not allowed to do against enemy combatants that the police are allowed to do against citizens. So I feel like there's some range of actions that you can actually demand that police forces not take. For example, in terms of a response, why do cops show up at peaceful protests in full riot gear? Why?
In case there's a riot.
But what do you mean in case there's a riot? In case someone pulls out a gun and shoots somebody? But what if someone is peacefully walking? Like, why do you then? I just feel like there are ways that we are sort of encouraging people to interact with communities who are peacefully protesting. The citizens have the right to peacefully protest. You're essentially there to make sure that harm doesn't come to them, but that's not how it's actually happening. it's like a confrontation with the cop. Like, in a strange way, the cop is supposed to be there to ensure that you maintain your constitutional right to protest peacefully. Mm-hmm. But it actually becomes like a fight against the cop. I don't understand that. The cop is a representative of the state, of the federal government, of the Constitution. You are basically supposed to basically sit on the side and make sure people go down the street. Okay, fine. Maybe a citizen will get upset and then be like, get out of the street. And, you know, so maybe you're traffic control as well. But I don't buy the whole education thing. I really don't. I think it's just another excuse for something to be really long-term. Like stop and frisk, that was actually a very specific law instituted that made it possible for police to just roll up on people of color and create situations that were going to escalate.
Yep.
That's a law that you can change that law. So and I think there are, and we have, right? But there are a lot of laws in other places that are similar. Similar in terms of just like, you know what, you're allowed to roll up on someone and stop them for, I don't know, a busted taillight. I mean, maybe we examine these kinds of things we're stopping citizens for. Why?
You're talking about changing the function of their jobs. That's what
exactly. Exactly.
Like maybe. Yeah.
That's the kind of drastic thinking I think we need to have. Because look, in defense of police, I will say, I mean, you know, they are acting on the same. I mean, this bias that's in, you know, our collective consciousness. It's not just police. Like, let's just face it. It's just that A, police have guns, and B, they're empowered and expected to exert authority and control and that kind of thing. So I'm not trying to demonize police. I don't think that their bias or their behavior is somehow like other than a whole lot of the rest of the country. But so when I say taking drastic measures, it's not because there's something specifically bad about the police, but it is the case that like people are dying. Your question earlier, Chris, about like what other thing, you know, would we do take a ham-fisted approach? Well, I think about public health. You know, when there's an outbreak of something, like we try to contain it, like we have protocols to contain threats to public health. You know, I think we could debate, like based on the numbers, you know, whether this amounts to a public health epidemic. But even if it's not that, the ripple effect of the lack of trust, the fear on both, like in police on and in communities, sides. It's not like the every time a video like this comes out, and these are just the videos that are coming out. We know this stuff happens when it doesn't get recorded, but the videos come out. And it has this enormous ripple effect. And, like, I think we need to think drastically about how to contain that while we're also doing the long-term things. And I again, I'm not saying my ideas are the right ones. I'm just throwing things out. I thought, Tricia, you brought up some good ones. But I personally think that's the kind of thinking we need to be doing. We've got to stop this killing if we're ever going to build trust. It reminds me of, you know, I always have analogies with the Middle East. It reminds me of, like, in the Middle East when, you know, there'll be, like, in Israel or other places, it's like, well, we'll negotiate when there's 48 hours of quiet. And then there would never be 48 hours of quiet because there'd always be some person, maybe even just a, you know, quote, lone wolf, unquote, that, you know, but like that happens and then everything's sabotaged. And like, I just feel like we talk about building trust and then something else happens. And as long as that keeps happening, it's hard for me to see us ever get to the long term. It's like having an epidemic, like a disease that's spreading, and we're trying to come up with the long-term, whatever, vaccine treatment while it keeps spreading and it's getting worse and worse. And like, we have to contain and then figure out how to resolve long-term, in my opinion.
And I also think you just need to bring formal charges.
Because my idea is that you have to shift the perception that this is okay. Because the reason why, look, you know, I'm always shouting this, right? But it's racism. The reason why police are stopping black men and women in their cars, then shooting them dead, is because black lives don't matter. And we have to change that narrative. And so this is what I was saying to you earlier, Jason, is that if we took people's guns away, then they'd just be choking black people out like they did in the LAPD did in the 80s, or they did to that poor man in Staten Island 2 years ago. They would find some other way to murder black people. What we have to signal to the culture at large is that black lives do matter, so that when someone kills in this way, then when someone like binds your hands and shoots and tasers you to death, then you have to go away forever because that was murder.
Or let's just talk about the fact that it's vigilante justice. Like, I mean, we have a criminal justice.
They're vigilante justice because they are they're police officers. So
but you have a legal system. Definition. But you have a legal system.
Yeah, but Trisha, the thing is, I mean, so here's the challenge with, so when you
if
said
you don't bring charges, let me just make my point first and then you can sit. Okay. If you don't do like a formal charge, aside from the fact that we need to make the point that Black Lives Matter, I think we also have to make the point that you're not resolving these things on the street.
Okay.
We have to raise that bar a bit as well.
I agree. Like if cops who perpetrate these crimes start going to jail, that would have a positive impact. I agree with that. The challenge is we've had police officers charged in many different situations and they all get off. Some cases they don't get charged and that's heinous and unacceptable, but we haven't seen anyone go to jail. So,
but that's what I want. But I want automatic indictment. It's just a formal charge. You got to have your day in court.
But
then I want people to be arrested.
All right. Well, one before the other.
But you actually have to be charged, right?
The problem is at this point, and this is why it's a systemic problem. The laws are not. I'm not sophisticated enough to know which it is. Either our laws aren't strong enough to truly hold police accountable, because even those who get charged get off, or our judicial system has flaws in it, and it's probably both. It's probably a combination. But when we had that Facebook argument, Chris, like you said, like what we need to do is advocate for people to go to jail, and like I agree, and yet like that has not worked thus far. Like it has. I can't think of one case
where a cop has
killed someone in one of these situations, and actually we've seen people get arrested, spend a little bit of time in jail waiting for a trial, but once the trial comes, they all get acquitted every friggin' time.
Yeah. Well, there's also the other thing too about, I mean, I think Campaign Zero, they talk about what needs to happen in terms of police union contracts. I mean, there you go. You might have to go back to the bargaining table. A lot of the things that you see that happens in sort of the indictment process has been sort of previously negotiated.
That's right.
So those are concrete, movable, actable, actionable items that you can act upon, right? Because police are allowed to see all the evidence against them.
Well, and you have these clips in Baltimore. We used to, they've changed it now. There was a friggin' 10-day period before a police officer could get interrogated about charge. It's crazy. But what you're saying, Trish, is easier said than done. The FOP.
It is.
It's a lot of power. It's definitely. By the way, Trump said in the debate that they endorsed him. I didn't realize that. That tells you where the FOP is. I mean, that's outrageous.
I mean, and it's also pretty aggressive.
Just like on the podcast.
It's so aggressive too, though. It's so aggressive because to my mind that says that you perceive that you're under attack in some way, and that you have chosen. I mean, no responsible party, no responsible person really has outwardly endorsed Trump. No one that's really responsible. The alt-right, maybe, all those folks, yes. But to have the police union publicly come out and say, I'm going to go for this racist, xenophobic one right here.
Yep.
I mean, that's a very powerful statement.
It's awful. I think it's awful.
I'm kind of done, though, Chris. I'm kind of done.
With
that's
what
it is. No, I'm just kind of done. I mean, it's scary out there.
You're done. I'm done. I'm
I'm applying to Hillary Clinton to be her secretary of the police.
Oh, well, yes.
She's cabinet position.
Listen, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. People are sitting around here thinking that Donald Trump would be the one to introduce a federal police force. Let me tell you, Hillary would do it in a heartbeat. I don't see her backing away from that.
I'm interested to see what happens with this. Like, I have ideas about what I think could stop this, but I'm interested in what is going to come on. And a lot of it's going to come down to the election and the way that Congress reorients itself, I think, honestly.
I think so.
I do think there should be some federal legislation that impacts this problem, whether it should be like a 50-state federal police force, like a G.I. Joe or something.
I don't know about that.
But that's the thing, right? We're talking about something like a G.I. Joe, like some non-military yet military-grade
police force that can do what they need to do.
And I don't see that from being very different from the police force we have now.
But the rules of engagement are different. The rules of engagement are different. The training
is
different.
What you're talking about is the consequences would be different.
Yeah, the consequences have to be different.
There's some way to track Like, instead of, like, good old boys in, like, you know, in the yep. middle of Hicktown in, you know, southern USA deciding whether people are going to get tried, then it'd be, you know, it'd be Washington, D.C. I think it's an interesting idea. I think we should all read up on it and come back.
We have to monitor it. Keep monitoring the test cities. Okay. I'm gonna find that article about the test cities.
I think the
again.
Three of us should start a startup.
Do it.
A private police.
No, God, I don't even want that.
Oh my God, that's all we need.
We could do like an app. To. It's like an Uber for police. It's like,
oh yeah, and then who shows up? Fucking George Zimmerman. No, thank you.
No, thank you. Oh my God.
Come on, Chris, you've always wanted to be a vigilante. You could make yourself a Batman figure, show up on the scene of the crime with a utility belt. You know you want to.
I'd love that. Until I actually started when I was younger and I was kickboxing, and then I broke my shin and I was like, this sucks. And then I was like, ow, my shin. Ow.
They have I did say Campaign Zero, which has a policy platform about how to end police violence. Yeah. Well,
can I be honest? Part of what inspired me to bring this up in the first place on Facebook, I don't find Campaign Zero compelling.
It's not sexy right now for you, right?
No, it's not. No, it's not about sexy. I think a police department could do all of those things and still
kill be bad.
Black men who aren't threatening them. I think we need to think more radically. I really do.
The things they're recommending are things that Chris is suggesting, right?
Long-term. I'm not saying
long-term solution.
We should do all of them. I'm just not sure that they would completely eradicate the problem.
Now a word from our sponsor. That'd be fun, though, wouldn't it?
Just add one. Just add something.
I got a new I just picked up a new – like, I've been wearing a briefcase, and I hate it because it's one shoulder. I've always preferred backpacks. I've been doing this for 3 years. The thing's falling apart. So I got this bag that is a backpack. Like, it very neatly transforms from one to the other. I'm very happy about it.
Well, that was
And I got it at Marshall's, so that's our sponsor. Yeah.
Backpacks from Marshall's. If it's good enough for Jason, it's good enough for you.